Welcome to the little red barn, where we're bouncing off the walls like a squirrel on meth with coffee to spare. We're racing through farm talk with energy to share. From tractors to livestock, we jump topic to topic, faster than a combine at harvest time. So buckle up, friends, and hold on tight. The Little Red Barn Podcast starts now.
That's right. The Little Red Barn Podcast starts right now. Once again, here, beautiful Claypool, Indiana, Red Barn Studios on another wonderful fall day. We're inching closer, Mr. Huyen, inching closer and closer to this holiday period where we just run through everything from turkey to ham to brisket, Christmas, New Year's. Are you ready?
Of course not. I'm starting to think of ideas for Christmas, but that's but you know what? The ski passes are getting up higher on the list.
That's easy because they can be gifts. You can just say, "Oh, Dad's doing the ski passes this year."
Ooh, there we go. Easy out.
Easy peasy. So, well, if you joined us a couple weeks back, you know that we had a very talented agronomist in the studio, courtesy of Mr. Huyen, and that was Mark Eads. And Mark, we invited him back here this week because up in his stomping ground, there's a lot of tumultuous things, Charlie, happening in agriculture, right?
You know, this is one of your favorite subjects.
It's one that I kind of get worked up from time to time rather deeply, and it's land use.
Yeah, the steam's already starting to come out the ears. I see it
already. No, I'm pretty calm. I'm pretty calm, cool, and collected because honestly, there's multiple sides to stories, and that's I'm figuring Mark's going to knock me down a couple of pegs here. And point out sides of the story that I haven't thought of. But, yes, I'm very passionate about land use. We, this past summer, let's go back, I think it was May or June, there was a big data center that was wanting to come in and gobble up about 500 acres of land in Kosciuszko County. Maybe that's a little high. Maybe I'm getting the numbers confused. But, anyway, data center was going to be 11 buildings, and there was a big fight before the County Area Plan Commission and eventually the county commissioners on that, and it was denied. The county worked very hard, and then the community worked very hard to fight against that. But I think that's just was round number one, and they're going to come back more and more and more because in Kosciuszko County, Charlie, I don't know if you know this, but we have three Class A lines that come together in one specific part of the county. And that means there's a hell of a lot of power there, and the data centers crave power. And I know while it was data centers here, we haven't had to fight a solar fight in Kosciuszko County because back several years ago, there was a moratorium put in place on the part of the county, and now the zoning laws are such in a way that it's too difficult to put commercial solar in Kosciuszko County. But over your way, you've dealt with solar. To the east of us, Noble County, huge fight over solar. To the north, Elkhart County, huge solar field in my old stomping grounds. I grew up in New Paris, Millersburg, now half covered by solar fields in Elkhart County. So solar and data centers and land use on that, we're seeing a lot more of it. And Mark, welcome back, first of all, after manganese discussion of last time. We call it the Great Manganese Debate of 2025. Don't look at me that way, Charlie. But we're having you back here, and your stomping grounds up in the St. Joe County, LaPorte County area, farmers that you work with up there, you're seeing the effects of land use change, I guess call it land use change, first and foremost.
I'm seeing it firsthand. Solar farm, data center, battery plant, all the new construction and everything that comes with it couldn't have landed any more ground zero in the middle of a growing area than it has mine.
Yeah. And you gave us a little bit of a heads up behind this. You know, a lot of times farmers refer to where they're growing crops as God's country. But you kind of laid it out that of all of your travels across this great nation where you've worked and where you've been, the area that is ground zero for this land use change is some of the best ground you've ever had the pleasure of working with.
It's really hard to beat 2.5 feet of dark loamy topsoil underlaid with white sand and gravel, and good clean iron-free water at 70 feet deep. I don't know where else you go to find that. It's some of the best, definitely the most consistent ground I've ever worked on. Maybe I've worked on ground out in Iowa or Missouri Valley or someplace like that that may possibly be a little better. But that also comes with the threat of hail and high winds. And, I mean, it is a beautiful, it's right off the coast, the southeast coast of Lake Michigan. Mm-hmm. Very well buffered there. Yeah, it's God's country.
So what's the issue? I mean, let's get down to brass tacks. I didn't want the data center. I helped try and fight against that. I'm not a proponent of solar. I think there is a place for solar. I'm not sure whether it's commercial solar. I just think there's a place for solar panels on the roof of a house and offsetting your own electric costs. So I'm not anti-solar, but I think commercial solar is a joke. I know that we are part of the problem because data centers, because of what I have in my hand, actually I carry around two of them now, the phones and the stupid machine learning, the AI. Charlie, you and I have talked about AI with Dr. Scott Strong, seems like forever on this podcast.
Yep.
So we're part of the problem. But why here? Why are all these things come together in north central, northwest Indiana?
Number one, the number two reason you've already touched on, and that's the fact that there is a pretty good web of energy.
Mm-hmm.
Way before the any of this came in, this has been 2, 3, 4 years ago. Didn't think anything about it, but the power company went through and started updating all the towers, hanging more lines, started doing all these things. And, of course, at that point in time, I was working with my growers, and some of my growers are like, E.G., you handle dealing with them as far as, you know, any of the reclamation work that they had to do after they came in and did their work. But I never thought at that point in time that what was going to be following was a very large solar farm along with a data center and a now defunct GM battery plant.
Oh, that is defunct now.
Yeah. Yeah. It sounds like GM's going to put that building up for sale.
Oh, wow.
They built the framework and the
but that land's not going to go back to agriculture. We just lost the land, and it's just a big old building that's going to have something else worthless in it.
Tens of millions of dollars spent on the development on that piece already. So
why is that going, not to get off topic here, but that's what we do. Why is that going tits up?
I think it's just the lack of interest of battery-powered vehicles.
See, and that's what I thought, that's what you're going to say. And there's a neighbor that lives just a stone's throw from the farm here from me that swears, and he's had this conversation with me 4 or 5 times. He goes, Ryan, if you think that's going away, if you think the battery stuff's going away, and he goes, I'm worried about ethanol. Ethanol's on its way out. Everybody's going to have a battery-powered vehicle here, blah, 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 blah. I see that battery plant defunct. I know Kokomo's having problems with their battery plant, but yet here we still are. So that's an interesting sidebar. All right, go ahead, keep going.
So so up there, probably the biggest thing that that makes that area look so good to these companies is we have more water than we know what to do with.
At least we
thought we did.
I don't think we do.
So here's the deal. All right. The whole climate change thing.
All right, here we go.
What does it matter if we don't have water? I just came off. I did a year contract with the Indiana Wildlife Federation. Been to Washington, D.C. lobbying for the National Wildlife Federation. Mm-hmm. I'm a don't get me wrong, guys. I'm a farm boy first, but I also believe that there's plenty of room for all of us and everything. And sometimes we don't do the best job of managing resources and what we could. If we did, we wouldn't have all the water pollution that we have. We wouldn't have all the air pollution that we have. It goes on down the line. But I think the number one threat to our future and our kids' future and mankind is how we treat our fresh water, whether it be groundwater or surface water, either one. I mean, they're both tied together.
Take a look at Western Kansas. Take a look in Western Kansas. The Ogallala Aquifer.
That's where my family's from.
Has shrunk in size, and now it used to be, and there were dairies. There were dairies that would relocate out in Western Kansas because of the amount of wide open space, the ability to grow silage crops like Milo, whatever. The land was, but now the wells that they have to dig to tap the waters that dairies need to survive are pushing 400 or 500 feet.
And they're starting to tap bad wells with alkali water.
Exactly.
And quality becomes an issue.
And Western Kansas agriculture has gone downhill in the past 10, 15, 25 years because of the scarcity of water. That Ogallala Aquifer is not getting it. They've tried to recharge the aquifer. It doesn't work. Once you've done messed it up, you've done messed up, Aaron. Yeah, we're not putting that genie back in the bottle. So, and I think this area, and I believe the St. Joe County Council woke up to this, or City Council, one or the other, woke up to it about 3 or 4 months ago, starting to think, hey, maybe we should do some studies and put some ordinances in place for governing groundwater because of all these places coming in. I think they woke up a little bit, because I can see this area becoming like Western Kansas real easy if we don't do stuff right.
It's all about, so there has been changes up there as far as what was originally permitted. And here's something, I've been fairly active, and the biggest thing I wanted, okay, we all knew that the data center was coming. So there was some opportunity there that it's really hard to get a straight answer in St. Joe County on anything.
I think you can probably plug any other county into that, Charlie. We've had that discussion.
It's
but sure.
special in oh, yes. St. Joe County.
Okay.
That West Side machine is something like I've never seen before, or dealt with before. You know, they were talking 4.5 million gallons a day.
Yep.
There were two huge trunk lines ran, and at first they were going to discharge it naturally. And I've heard so many things. I don't know what's right or wrong, but I do know that there are two huge, huge trunk lines laying along the railroad track from the data center area into the wastewater treatment plant on the north side of South Bend. So it sounds to me like what kind of happened there was the data center came, and they were like, it sounded like the city of South Bend and some of the county folks were like, by the time it was all said and done, they were like, you're going to buy your water from us, and then you're going to pay us to pump it into South Bend and put it through the water treatment plant. And in the meantime, technology, I can only imagine how technology advances in that area. It's probably like a lightning strike, you know, very quickly. And in the meantime, it sounds like Amazon has came up, or somebody has came up with the technology to where they're only going to have to use water for about 2.5 months out of the year, just the hottest part of the summer. So, again, I don't know what to believe, what not to believe, but from a very reliable source, that's kind of where I heard that they've left it. So the water usage isn't going to be as big of an issue as it was, but still, they're pumping a lot of water.
And it's the reason why they're here.
In an area that's heavily irrigated,
yeah.
How could it be affecting – That was another thing that that blows my mind is I've shared this with different farmers and people in agriculture and people outside of agriculture is we are very predictable.
We meaning farmers. People
in general.
Okay.
And it is human nature to overlook the things that are abundant around you.
Mm-hmm.
I've done work all over the East Coast of Africa. I've done work in Western Nebraska, all over Wyoming, Montana, Western Dakotas. We have no idea how good we have it here in Northern Indiana.
Well, when you rattled off those places, I knew you were talking. You're still on the water piece because every place that you just mentioned, there is no water.
I have a good friend in Wyoming. He is a he does a lot of mineral rights work, but actually is made probably at least half of his considerable income over the course of the last 30 years of being an attorney. Either defending or supporting a client that over water right issues.
Yep. And I've said a lot. I spent 13 years in Kansas, working in Kansas and being out there. And one of the things that farmers here in Indiana do not understand, I think every farmer in Indiana should go to Kansas. North Central Kansas, South Central Nebraska, get in that Republican River Valley, get up into parts of Nebraska where irrigation wells come with property or not, so let's negotiate in or out, but those wells also have not a capacity. Charlie, here, you want more well irrigation? What do you do?
Flip on the switch.
Flip on a switch. Or, and if it's not enough, what do you do? Put out a bigger well. Let's take out this 8. Let's go with a 10. Let's go with a 12. What? Just put in a bigger pipe. Out there, they get so many inches per year. That's what they get. And our farmers here don't have any clue how that works out there. And again, I think to your point, Mark, we overlook what we have, right? Just Charlie needs more water, gets a bigger pipe.
Yeah, we are blessed with it.
Absolutely. We had some guests come in many years ago from Australia. And the big eye-opening event for us was the irrigation issue. They go, you got irrigation? Yeah. How much water do you get? We pump it right out of the river. We don't even think about it. They go, wow, we got a certain amount. That's what we got for the year. And they will come
out. Make that work.
Make that work, because otherwise it's not going to happen.
So we've talked a little bit about why this is a hotbed or hot zone for action, but Mark, there's the other side of this, because this ground that these buildings are on or that's been claimed for these projects, whether it's the data center, whether it's solar, whether whatever, that was acquired, and it wasn't just forcibly acquired. You know, look, when that data center was coming and was being proposed in north of Clunet, there was a farmer that was stood to gain a butt ton of money and wouldn't have to do anything forever. That's the other side of this equation, what it's done to land values, right?
It's changed that dramatically. As we were talking a little earlier, it's kind of created a false land grab that is becoming a true reality.
Mm-hmm.
You know, they're talking about a second data center going in, and I saw a map last week. It's not going to end there.
Mm-hmm.
So essentially from Michigan City through Elkhart County, there is a potential for 9 total to go in. I think it's here. I think it's going to it just kind of dawned on me. I don't know what all can be done to stop it at this point.
Can't we just draw a line in the sand?
I don't know. Can we? you know, politics are involved.
Oh, God, yes.
Politics are going to sway 90% of the decisions that need to be made for whether or not it's going to happen. And I have learned something that local politicians in some counties are good old boys who really mm-hmm. care about what their neighbors want and think and what the people of the county, what the masses are wanting. And there's other counties where they could care less. And I think there's some officials that are the very best that money can buy, if you know what I mean.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah. And to keep ourselves from getting in trouble, we will not pontificate on who's what and where.
No,
in
sir.
This podcast.
I didn't mention
but,
anything.
But at the same time, here's what really chaps Ryan's butt. Every single project that comes up, every single project that is proposed, every single project that is actually gaining approval of politicians takes ag ground. Not a single project takes 130 acres of brownfield in downtown fill-in-the-blank and puts it there.
I've heard this argument before.
Why does it always come to agriculture land? Why?
I think there's a lot of it has to do with it's cheap in comparison.
Sometimes. And farmers don't like to hear that because they watch these. Charlie, when's the last auction you went to? And he's like, oh, God, that was cheap. I should have bought that.
Never.
Never. Right? So farmers don't want to hear what you said, but it's right. If solar is paying the leases on solar, if they're, let's just use easy math, $2,000 an acre rent per year for 30 years, what's the value of that land? $60,000 an acre.
Yep.
So therefore, that $15,000 that you passed up, Charlie, because you're a tightwad, was cheap. That's a 75% discount.
That's what's happening. It's that, and it's made a very, very small percentage of growers very wealthy, which have become almost impossible to compete against in trying to get rid of that money that they got paid for the farm ground that whatever expansion is happening on.
And that probably makes it a lot more difficult to do what I just suggested, draw a line in the sand. Because if I or you or somebody, let's just draws the line in the sand, then all of a sudden, if I'm the next guy that's able to sell, by drawing that line in the sand, you've impinged on my ability to become rich as well.
You've just touched on something that I struggle with. I really do. I'm very libertarian in my views and mm-hmm. the way I think, and particularly now that I'm seeing with all the sprawl and expansion that's just getting started up there, how hard it is for my farmers farming around that. The traffic is awful. What is body count up there? 11? Including a school bus?
Hmm.
And nobody seems to talk about that. What's a human life worth? Is it worth an Amazon plant? But I'm sorry.
No,
I kind of went the wrong way there.
No, that's it. But it's true.
But
it's
now
very
I have these farmers and their families who are dodging traffic down the county roads that they rarely saw traffic on. Heavy truck traffic, everything else. And they're pulling out of fields with grain trucks loaded and combines and some of these guys are running, you know, down a road, Mark 30. And I stopped the other day. There was a county sheriff parked in one of my growers' lots. He'll park there behind the equipment as traffic goes by. And I pulled up and, excuse me, waved to him and said, glad to see you here. He says, would you believe I just wrote a guy up for 105 and a 30? I said, yeah, I believe that all day long. I've seen him. I mean, it's crazy up there. So you have these guys who it almost seems like every month there's a piece of property sold and, you know, there's going to be strip malls, there's going to be gas stations, there's going to be everything else under the sun come in up there, housing. That sprawl is just getting going. And so now they're like, well, with what land could be worth, how many acres could I buy in central central Nebraska. Some place that is very ag friendly, is probably never going to change. I don't have traffic to deal with. It's great education system, you know. So I have growers thinking that way now. And who's to say, no, you can't sell your land for a bunch of money and go and improve your lifestyle and the health and the and everything of your family. So that's where I'm stuck big time right now, because I can understand why my growers want to get the heck out of there. And the best way for them to do that is be able to sell their land for good money so that they can go replace it somewhere else.
So what is the answer? Because, you know, I view, and I know the answer isn't just a easy peasy statement, but you know, I tend to look at life in general, and this is why politicians, I think, fail. Not enough people look at life and look at the way things go like a chessboard. If you're good at chess, which I am not, but I do understand the concept of chess, but a good chess player knows that if he makes move A, off of move A, counter moves A, B, C, D, E, and F can all happen. And then that he's calculated what his move is going to be versus A, versus B, versus C. And it's more than just the quick and easy, oh, if I do this, this is going to happen. I think we see this at all levels of our political system right now, whether you're Republican, Democrat, Libertarian, or whatever. Nobody, very few people think beyond the next one move, let alone four, five, or six down the road. But as we look at what you just laid out, you know, farmers trying to get out, move someplace else to sprawl. We here in Kosciuszko hear it all about housing. Oh, we're so housing deficit. We need more housing. We need more housing. Blah, 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 blah. No, we don't. We don't need that much more housing. We need the houses that are here to be lived in. We've got plenty of opportunity for housing to be built in places that housing exists rather than sprawling. So when nobody's looking at a chessboard with more than one move in mind, how do we combat any of this, whether it's housing sprawl, whether it's urban sprawl, whether it's technology sprawl, whether it's manufacturing sprawl, because it's all part of it?
You brought up something here that I have contemplated for the last year quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
Those quiet times driving down the road, or I'm out soil testing. I've come up with nothing.
And it feels to me, Charlie, that when Mark comes up with nothing, that's a rare occurrence these days, right?
Yes, it is.
It's a complexity of everything involved. Yeah. And what is fair? What is actually fair?
Well, but that's where I'll cut you off right there, Mark. What do we tell our kids? Life isn't fair, dude. Sorry. Sucks to be you.
Right now, there was a second data center that went in that's wanting to go in, and I think it's going to.
Mm-hmm.
But I think the county council made a good showing of voting it down. And I don't know, it's a long ways from being dead. I'm 90% sure it's still going to go in.
Sure.
But my thought, going back to what I was saying earlier, is okay. That guy has an eye, and he's a farmer, great farmer, good guy. Who's to say, okay, we made these one or two guys filthy rich, but it's your turn to become filthy rich, and we're not going to let you do that.
But I will flip that on the other side again, and I feel it because I can put myself easily in the shoes of the guy that had, let's just say, 4,000 acres, is ready to be done with it, and I want to cash out. My kids don't want anything to do with the operation anyway. Fine.
Exactly.
It's my retirement check. I can put myself in that shoes. But when you ask the question, why can we do it for him and not this guy? Why do we do it? Local economic development offices do that all the time. The Kosciuszko Economic Development Corporation, the Marshall County Economic Development Corporation, the Fulton County Economic, and we can fill all. They pick winners all the time. They go court businesses and they roll out the red carpet. They do all this kind of stuff and they will make that one a win. Kosciuszko County, slate. We're going to build electric vehicles here in Kosciuszko County, Mark. I got my order in for a slate in 2027. All right, it's going to be a cheap electric car. I'm going to drive around in my glorified golf cart and yay, rah, go electric. Okay. But we rolled out, I mean, they got so much stuff to be here. Local economic development offices do this in business all the time.
Something I
Why shouldn't we turn around and do it to them?
Something I want to let people know. The last two dramatic economic turnarounds, bad ones that mm-hmm. we've had in this country, mm-hmm. it was the American farmer propped us up.
Uh-huh.
They were the sole salvation in a crashing economy.
Hmm?
Things happened to be very good for the guys. They were buying combines. They were buying pickups. Don't forget your farmer neighbors.
And that has nothing to do with the fact that what's Farm Bureau like to say all the time, Charlie? You see it all along the road. I still remember the sign in Kansas on I-35. The Kansas farmer feeds 155 people and you. I hated that sign. I hated that because no one wants to hear the fact that, well, you know what? I'm the reason you can eat. Just like, you know, when's the last time a sales guy, you know, like, you know, or somebody that was in sales has told somebody else that works in the company, hey, I'm the reason that you get a paycheck. If I wasn't selling, you wouldn't be getting paid. No one likes to hear that. That's an absolutely horrible, it's a crappy argument. I hate it when we still point out that what agriculture feeds, but the economic recovery, that speaks to a lot more people.
Yeah, and so we can't forget that. We cannot forget what, and think about the percentage of the county taxes that are rolling in off of farm ground compared to any other standalone industry.
Well, they'll flip that one right there. So that was one of the arguments that was made in the data center that was north of Leesburg. The fact that on farm ground, it was only going to be bringing in at the tax rate that it was only $11,000 a year. But boy, howdy, when we build all of these buildings on here and stuff those full of computers, that is millions and billions of dollars that have come back in, which is false because right. What is property tax?
Right.
It's well, if a computer, what right. depreciates faster? What asset depreciates faster than a tech asset? Nothing. And by the time you went through the tax abatement process and all that kind of stuff, 10 years out when they finally started to pay taxes, what were they being paying taxes on? An asset that depreciated 18 months into its cycle, and then you got taxes on warehouses, which are not taxed at a very high rate. So, but so, taxes are they're brought up all the time.
These are all things, you know, in those drives home at night, and it's just me and my dog and my mind wandering, driving home, trying to make sense of things. I've looked at it from every way possible, and it's weird. Sometimes I'm like, you know what? Again, putting yourself in the farmer's shoes, I'd be wanting to sell and get the heck out of there because it is becoming very difficult to farm, mm-hmm. and people don't realize that. Those farmers were there first. Yep. Those farmers were there first.
And that's why I asked the question and when trying to brainstorm, how do we stop the sprawl? Because the only reason data centers or solar are doing what they're doing is because of the need that is being propagated by the sprawl, whether it's housing, whether it's retail, whether it's whatever. The sprawl is what's bringing that here. Is there any way to stop the sprawl?
That's going to have to come from somebody way smarter than me and the politicians that are making the rules.
Yeah, well, they're not smarter than you. I'll put that aside.
Well,
so if you're precluding yourself and you just mentioned the politicians, we're screwed.
and again, I hate casting nets. I really do. Yeah. I think that shows a person with a small mind. I think there's some politicians that are out there 100% for the right reasons. I really do, but
God bless you.
But I also think that there's some that are just going to hop on the next greatest fad.
Right.
And that seems to be the vast majority of them.
Any difference in this kind of conversation on, because we've mentioned two specifically. We talked about the data center and the kind of the industrial side and solar. Is there any difference in your mind between the two because of, well, let's throw around what the salesman on it say. Well, after 30 years, you can go back and farm this. Is there in is there any different in Mark difference in Mark's mind between the two?
So, one of those solar farms landed right. The majority on the farm is on one of my growers' farms, who I'm very close with.
Okay,
and the one thing about the solar farm is you drive by and you look at it. And you say to yourself, okay, it wouldn't take that long to disassemble that, pull the post, and turn it back into commercial agriculture.
Okay.
It could actually be done pretty quickly and pretty easily.
Compared to the
big industrialized buildings and the billions of dollars of infrastructure, that ground's never going to be farmed again.
The battery plant's a good example.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Battery plant, the whole Amazon. I mean, have you been up there?
The last time I was up there was a little less than a year ago.
I would love to take you guys for a drive sometime.
Because when I was up there the last time, I was running up and down State Road 2. So through the heart, just to the south of that and back and forth, I actually picked up a old pull type combine from an old boy up there within the stone's throw of the rolling prairie up
probably
there.
More than likely I know the guy.
So it's been a minute. It's been a minute since I was up that way.
Yeah, it's a genuine free for all. Yeah. And to drive by, driving through like the middle of the Amazon campus, I get turned around as to where I'm at compared to what it used to be. And that was all ground that I drove around all summer in my ATV or pickup and looked at crops and were making recommendations on.
See, also where I'm torn a little bit, especially on the solar piece, and this is a change in idea for me from 3-4 years ago. I had the opportunity to sit down with a farmer over in the wheat field area, actually probably north of Wheatfield now. But we were over there, and it was right in. He was surrounded by all the solar farm in that area. And so I used that as my good old boy red state talking point. Oh, you must love living in and around this. He goes, honestly, it's not too bad. I said, what do you mean? He goes, no, I don't hate it. And I asked why. And he was very honest. He said, well, here's the honest to goodness reason. We shouldn't be farming this ground anyway. This was a swamp back in the 30s that we drained. The ground is crap. It was meant to be a swamp. It should be a swamp. If they're going to reclaim anything and make it solar, it should be here. And I walked away with a very big respect for that farmer, that guy, because he knew. He knew, yeah, and he was farming. He was trying to make a living on it, but he knew that ground should have never been touched when we drained that swamp early in the 20th century. Should not have even ever been touched.
Yeah, once again, the Kankakee Marsh.
Yep.
Look at all the resources that we've sent down ditches, rivers, just completely gotten rid of.
Yep. Yep. So again, I think there's places for solar. I just don't know. It goes back to my original question a while back. Why do they come after prime farm ground first?
If you look at what they spent for the land underneath the Amazon plant versus the total cost of the project, it's a thimbleful and a gallon of milk.
Jeez.
I mean, it seriously, the land that the three of us as agriculturalists and farmers look at and go, oh my God, they got that much money for that much an acre for that. And then when you look at the total cost of the project, it's nothing. Nothing, yeah, in comparison.
And it comes back to the fact that Charlie whines and complains about land prices and how $4 corn isn't going to pencil on it. And he's exactly right. $4 corn doesn't pencil on $15,000 an acre ground or $20,000 acre ground.
Absolutely.
It doesn't
not.
Pencil at all. But we're looking at it through the wrong lens. We can't look at it through the lens of corn and what we can grow on it. It's the value of whatever. It's the opportunity cost for something else.
I look at what my farmer friends who made it through the 70s and 80s. Mm-hmm. I have so much respect for those guys. The guys that came through, bounced through, and you know, were able to
survive.
Yeah, surviving those times. I was pretty young at the time, but I still understood.
Well, not only did they have the interest and all the financials, but you were bookended by weather catastrophes.
Oh, high interest rates.
1988, those guys had, putting that after everything else. Oh, my gosh.
It'd be like going up to bat against a major league pitcher and every single ball he's throwing is a beanball.
Yeah.
You don't even have a chance to hit one out of the park.
Yep. So, it's crazy. It's crazy. Well, I feel like we've talked here, pontificated for a good solid 40 minutes, and we're nowhere farther down the chain. But I guess, do we have any parting shots? I mean, if you, Mark, can't figure out what an answer is, and you waffle either side, how does the ag industry, what is a smart way for agriculture as an industry to figure this out going forward? Do we have to change our viewpoints? Do we have to pick a side? What? Is there any light at the end of the tunnel for us as we try and shape our, not even worldview, our region view as we deal with this land use change that's not just coming at us, it's being forced down our throats? What do we do?
This is I'm going to say this. There's certain things in life that have been handed my way like this. And this is going to sound awful. I've almost been forced to give up because anything that I thought that we might be able to change for the better or things, none of it mattered. None of it mattered. And it's very discouraging and disheartening to me.
Mm-hmm.
And again, I have got a foot in both camps. I see now just how difficult it is for the growers that are left up there to acquire more land, to just go about their day-to-day field activities because of the traffic and everything else that's just become a nightmare. In the middle of summer, I have set for as much as a half an hour just across State Road 2. Imagine doing that with a semi. Or
right.
A piece of farm equipment.
Right.
So part of me is like, you know what? You got a chance to sell that ground, sell it, and get the heck out of here and go someplace that is favorable for ag. But my dad was a military man. If he taught me anything, you never go down without a fight.
Right. Well, and the other thing that I would fear in that is because, you know, I'm very, you mentioned fair. And the very first thing that I pulled out was, well, life's not fair because I've told my kids that, and that was drilled into my head. But at the same time, I look at it, all right, well, if I give in on this one, then I'm just the guy that gives in. And so let's just say I do move to central Nebraska. Oh, the bastard's going to follow me out there and gonna try and take my land in central Nebraska.
They would me. That would be my life.
So, you know, it's like drawing that line, stand in and fight, because you know what? If I don't have Custer's last stand here, which is a bad example, Custer died. But, you know, he put his last stand here because otherwise you're going to follow somewhere else. So
the one thing I say is
can agriculture get on the same page? Because right now it's one farmer, one farmer, one farmer, and we're buddies, but we're all looking out for number one, right?
It's both a beautiful thing and a monstrosity within ag. If we were to all get all leaning the same way,
mm-hmm.
Can you imagine the things that we could have done throughout history?
We've done it before with the co-op system, before the co-op system became vertically integrated and is no longer the co-op. But the co-op system started with just a bunch of farmers banding together and saying, hey.
No more.
No more. This is what's going to happen now. You're going to do it this way.
But that rugged individualism that every farmer has can also be his own worst enemy.
Exactly.
And it's a beautiful thing.
Right.
I love farmers and ranchers. They're my favorite people in the world.
Yeah. All right, Charlie, take us home. What's your talking point here? What's you walking away with?
There's got to be a solution to coexisting with these different entities. There's got to be a special way, but it's going to take some special people, I think, on the city government to realize that, okay, you're going to have to respect that semi needs to cross the road.
Do we need more agriculturalists, more farmers involved in city county politics?
I think there needs to be, and we just need people to step up to the plate and get into these positions and get into influential positions, maybe not hold a place in these government entities, but at least have their ear so that they can get a point across.
Ryan, actually, I agree with you 100%. Some of these young farmers, young, brightest farmers we got, guys in their 30s and 40s, I would do everything in the world to campaign for them.
And somebody loud and vocal that will stand up and not necessarily and say, and well, first, not be afraid to say, this ain't right. Call out things that aren't right. But then also be able to try and bridge a gap and find a solution. And that's, we've got a lot of talkers sometimes, and we don't have enough solution makers, and we need both.
Yeah, we need people that have some foresight and not short-sightedness,
mm-hmm.
As far as planners. It's a very, very complicated with lots of moving parts, with a twist of politics and luck.
Yeah.
And it's so weird. In the United States, we are so short-sighted all the way around. We are, and I'm not saying that in a horrible way either, but we are.
Well, I think you touched on it earlier. That tends to happen when you're blessed with so much.
We are. We're absolutely blessed. And that's another thing. Say your prayer, keep those people that are making those decisions in your prayers, and hopefully they're being led the right way. Hopefully they're making those decisions for our generations that are depending upon us for making sound decisions now for what their future is going to be.
All right, so what my takeaway is Charlie is going to be running for president of county council in Marshall County. And he's also going to step up and be the ag liaison for the Marshall County Economic Development Corporation. So
It
sounds awesome. We're going to get yard signs printed here this week, and we'll be out to stick them in everybody's yards here in the weeks following, right? You're on board with this, right?
Sure, why not? Let's start with my father's front yard.
Oh, shoot. No, but it's a good conversation. It's one of these podcasts that I'm sorry we don't have more answers. But, you know, sometimes we just have to start people thinking and noodling. You talk about driving down the road, going from soil sample site to soil sample site and start thinking about these things. I, too, driving back and forth to Ohio, do some things over there, get to thinking about things like this. Sometimes it's the frank and honest discussions that may kickstart an idea in somebody. If you're listening to the podcast, first of all, thank you and like and subscribe. But secondly, if you have ideas, comment, talk to those around you, start building. I hate to use the word grassroots, but it all starts with bonding and building coalitions, even between farmers. The rugged individualism paired with another rugged individualism to maybe be able to move a needle somewhere in your county. So that's what I would suggest everybody to do, and take this message, this discussion, and run with it. Gentlemen, this update brought to you by the Mac America Ag Finance Group, Northern Indiana. Give them a call, 574-253-3433. Express loan applications can give you approval on up to $3 million of financing for real estate or infrastructure loans in 24 to 48 hours. Again, that's 574-253-3433. Charlie, thanks for joining me. Mark, pleasure as always. Feel free to come back anytime.
Right,
I love
appreciate
discussions
it
with
very
you.
Very much. It's been a real honor.
And this is the Little Red Barn.